So I sent an email out to Dev Planning there that has a status meeting. So the agenda for today, or a wiki page, a link to a wiki page for the status meeting today. The agenda will be update on current linkage numbers, and then we'll get an update from Peter V. And then a status of the pending cycle collector code that's in Bugzilla.
Here's Johnny now.
There's Johnny. And then an update from Jonas, D-Baron, and JST, and then we'll talk about what's next. So first, can we get an update on the current leakage numbers? Anybody volunteer those numbers?
I don't know the numbers.
So the tinderbox didn't show that much improvement from the DOM patch, but it seemed to improve things in our builds more than it did in the tinderbox.
On local?
Yeah, although there were some... I was a little suspicious that the... I don't know. I haven't looked since the fault since the null patch went in. So Peter.
Yeah. So I'm a little confused by the fact that there's one tinderbox that shows improvement in the same order as I'm seeing in my local build, and there's another one that doesn't show like almost no improvement.
Could they be running us on different setup pages?
So they're actually one is SeaMonkey and one is Firefox, so you can't really completely compare them. But I'm seeing the same drop in my local build on Firefox.
Which build
that I'm seeing? So the SeaMonkey tinderbox dropped, and I'm seeing the same order of drop in my Firefox build, but the Firefox tinderbox doesn't show any improvement. It's almost any.
Have you tried the page set that it uses for the leak tests, or just startup and shutdown?
I'm seeing just starting up and shutting down and seeing that improvement. I did run the leak test, but I haven't been able to compare yet.
Yeah.
I was planning to do that today.
Okay. Probably worth doing.
Yes.
Did the XBL patch land?
XBL patch. You mean the with the native, like everything for XBL bindings and proto bindings and stuff
exactly.
Like that?
Right.
That didn't land yet, no. No, I mean, I need to update that patch and then it needs to go through review.
Okay.
Do you want me to take that patch?
Will you have time?
I mean, I'll either take that patch or go through more code and add more checks myself.
Sure. I mean, if you want to take it, feel free. I have a tree that's updated. I haven't tried to run it yet, so maybe I can try to run it and then attach the new patch, and we can take it from there.
Yeah. What I'm worried about is if I go through stuff, then I may be adding things that you've already added. So.
Right. So I don't think for me that patch is not my priority right now because I have two other patches that actually do improve things a lot in my local build. One, when going to google.com/IG, and that patch has been reviewed by Brendan already and is now in Johnny's queue.
Okay.
And then there's an RDF patch that I've seen. So RDF data sources do their own cycle collection algorithm, but it's pretty broken. And I've seen RDF data sources keep, through the template stuff, keep Zool elements alive, and those Zool elements then kept event handlers alive, and those kept the global window alive. And so in my local build, when I start up, this is Firefox on OS 10, if I start up and shut down, I see two windows leaking. And with the RDF patch, when I start up and shut down, I see no more windows leaking. And so
right.
the leaking, yeah, that dropped to, like, we leaked, like, 23K or something like that, which is, I think, what we expect.
You mean 23K after that change?
Yes. Down from, like, 600 or something.
Very good.
Yeah, that 23K is, I mean, there's probably some real leaks there, but we can figure those out then.
Right.
But I'm not, like, because the global window is not leaking anymore, we release services on shutdown, and that changes everything.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to do is try those two patches on Windows and on Linux, maybe, and see, because I don't know if this is OS X specific or if it's just if others could reproduce it on other platforms.
Yeah, we could do that, but we could also just get it reviewed and checked in. It seems like the right thing to do, no matter what. And then
yeah,
see what Tinderbox has.
Sure. Okay. I'm just disappointed that I checked in my patch today and Tinderbox didn't seem to change.
Yeah, so in my own build, I just updated, and I'm seeing like 200K leaked on just Firefox startup and shutdown. And I didn't see that a few days ago with the earlier versions of your DOM patch.
Oh, you had less leaks?
Yeah. So, like, since you addressed review, what happened yesterday when I tested it was, like, I saw 210K some of the time, and then 8K some of the time. But I just did it twice in a row and got 210K both times.
Hmm.
So, I mean, the review comment didn't really remove any cycle detection. It added, like, one thing. Was there any merge? Did you have to merge anything?
Of course, now I got 8K this time.
Yeah.
Now that I, you know, try and trap the output to get the printfs that I put in.
Now that you said it publicly, that's...
Yeah.
So the numbers that I get are pretty consistent. Like, I always see...
What I saw when I... got the 200K was just a single global window not collected due to two external references.
Okay. So one window.
Yeah.
Because I'm usually seeing two just on shutdown. And when I do the RDF patch, then I saw, like, that was reproducible. I tried multiple times to be sure. And when I did just the RDF patch, then that didn't leak any windows anymore, just starting up and shutting down. But as soon as you load the page, you usually leak a window again.
I'm seeing two windows leaked, but only one of them has external references.
Right, so it's probably an inner
mm-hmm.
and an outer. And so the outer keeps the inner alive, I think.
Curiously enough, I see an RDF assertion right before that. But
so yeah, I mean the RDF patch, even if it's not gonna like if it doesn't have the effect that we want, it's still good because we're removing like they do their own cycle collection, but not correctly. So it's better to hook it up to the cycle collector, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they like the composite data source adds itself as an observer to the data sources that it keeps alive. So you have a cycle, and then on release, it checks the number of references it has itself and compares it to the number of things that observe it. And so then if those two are the same, then it just manually removes itself from the other object. So it's very messy. And if the other object doesn't...
You don't know how hard that code was to write. I rewrote it like three times before it actually behaved correctly.
But the problem is that some of the other objects don't cooperate.
Yeah, I know.
And so in that case, it just breaks. So cycle collection, actually, once you add cycle collection, then you don't need to worry about the other object. If it keeps a reference to you, it should participate, and if it doesn't, then it will just go away when necessary.
Yeah. This isn't a test. This is session restore. When you session restore 55 windows, they all come up at once.
Nice.
Yeah, so I don't really know what we should do about the numbers. Like,
well, I mean, we might as well, since we know more things we can fix, we might as well check that in and see where we get with that.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I think it's, why worry about something that may not actually be a problem? We don't know yet.
Okay.
So one thing that would be nice to do for what it's worth is just to stick the bug numbers of patches that have yet to land in the wiki page for this meeting.
So that, yes, okay, I'll do
there's,
that.
There's a place for those of us who have stuff to, like, know what else to apply if we want to debug stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, so the RDF and the JavaScript one should apply cleanly to a tree and are not, like, there's no merge problems between the two.
Okay.
So the JavaScript one actually adds more traversal from JavaScript objects because I discovered that functions and scripts keep things alive that we weren't traversing, and then objects, like if you have getters or setters on properties, we weren't traversing those, so I added that. I'm still seeing JavaScript objects that have edges that we don't know about.
So which bugs is it that needs to land just so we make, so we get those in the wiki?
Let me post them in the channel.
Are the bugs all dependent on the original cycle collector bug?
I'm not sure.
Or blocking, rather.
Or block, yeah.
So the XPL one is 368.774. That in the channel. Click. Channel name? Click.
Yeah, I need to find the JavaScript one.
Actually, given this pause, I just wanted to say this is Ray Kitty. I'm not having anything in particular to say yet, but I wanted to suggest that if you know I'm work for Tim in the testing group, and you know as the discussion of this stuff moved along, you know I saw that there was a need for testing. If anybody has any suggestions, let me know. I've done a lot of leak analysis and things like that on macOS 10. I was in the dev tools group at Apple for a while, but I'm less familiar with Windows and Linux, but I'm very familiar with the Mac stuff. And if you guys have stuff, you need somebody to carry water, you know, something to, so that I can get up to speed, you know, and to help you guys out, let me know, whatever it is. And my email is rkitty@mozilla.com, and I'm usually on the channels as Ray, so just FYI.
Okay.
Speaking of testing, Graydon, I had one idea for something that would be good to assert? Because one problem we're having when we're writing this is that it's easy enough to always to traverse, to figure out which objects to traverse, but it's slightly harder to know which objects we need to unlink, because some things are sort of scary to unlink, because we're tearing down stuff in an unusual order, and so we're not sure if that would cause crashes.
Yeah.
So it would be awesome if we could add an assertion to the cycle collector so that once it detects something, once it detects the cycle and it calls unlink, that it afterwards is able, like, that it asserts that everything that was in that cycle actually got deleted. Could we do that by, before, once we've detected a cycle, put all those objects in a special, remember them somewhere, and then check if any of them are still in the purple buffer afterwards?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, you can only half do that, because objects essentially have two ways they can participate in collection. They can participate as purple, or they can participate as traversable. And so a certain number of our objects are traversable, but don't tell the cycle collector when they become alive or become dead. So their addref and release methods don't inform the cycle collector of anything happening. They just let you traverse through them. So those objects will not inform you when they've been unlinked, or when they've been destroyed, rather. In the process of destruction, there's no callback on those objects.
Right.
On any object that is in the purple buffer, yeah, you can take the intersection of the set of objects that you're unlinking with the current purple buffer, and then check to see that all of those ones, told the cycle collector to forget about them during the unlink phase, but not all of them.
Do we think that would be useful?
There's also stuff we could probably do in root and unroot, because you could look at the reference count and. In root and unroot, and for things that you unlinked, you should be able to assert that it's lower, or hopefully even zero, but not necessarily
yep.
in cases where unlink doesn't unlink everything.
Well, so we do one. So and that's what I'm trying to detect when unlink doesn't unlink everything, because usually we want unlink to unlink everything, right?
Okay.
Yeah,
so
it's the way that the cycle is supposed to be freed.
So. You might be able to do. It might be easier to do that in root and unroot, at least for native objects, because you've got a reference count there, and you could assert that if you unlinked something, then its reference count in unroot should be zero.
What do you mean by root and unroot? Is
so
that
in the native run, root for the native one, root just does addref and unroot does release. So the idea is that when you do all these unlink calls. You're holding an extra reference to everything so that they don't get destroyed while you're in the middle of calling unlink on some of them, so that you have the chance to call unlink on everything.
Yeah, there's sort of, during the unlink phase, there's a temporary grab onto all the objects you're about to unlink so that you can unlink them in arbitrary order.
Oh, I see. And that's
and
what
then,
you, that, that's what
yeah.
root and unroot is. Okay.
Yep.
So that could be an instrumentation point.
Yep. So yeah, either of those are possible. I would like to point out one thing. If you guys are running debug builds, somebody on IRC, now I've forgotten who it was, which is terrible. I think yesterday or the day before asked me if it was bad to be seeing the assertion, wrong number of, like the mismatch when you have there's an assertion that gets called when there's too many edges accounted for, like it saw too many incoming
right.
incoming edges, and it, like it has a ref count of 5 and it saw 6 edges coming into it, and that's a hard bug. That means someone instrumented one of the classes wrong, like you're representing an edge that doesn't actually exist.
So we were like
definitely
before I landed the dump when I landed the dump patch.
Yeah.
Before we landed it, the if you look at the logs on Tinderbox, that assertion was firing, and
okay.
after the patch landed, it wasn't anymore.
Okay, great. Because that's a really important one to get rid of. That represents
a
hard error.
I probably got one of them. But still, I mean, in general, if we see that assertion, it's important to track it down.
It's very important, right. Yeah. That represents, like, complete malfunctioning of the collector.
Yes.
Is that a normal NS assertion?
Yes.
I think so. I may have the assertion types wrong.
Unless you turn on the environment variable to stop running.
Right, but I mean, is it using the NS assertion macro is what I'm asking?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Next. Johnny, you said you were going to look into some XPCOM stuff?
XPConnect.
Yeah.
Basically, it didn't happen yet. Just a lot of pending patches still. So hopefully, I got those in. The big one landed, right?
Well, not the XPConnect. The XPConnect ones I don't think has landed yet.
Right. But the Big Dom
one landed.
Right, yeah. And the XBL is merged, though we don't know if it works yet. So if that makes it into a bug, I could apply it and just play with it.
Yeah, so all you need to do now is there's an XPConnect patch in the bug. It's on the wiki page now. I think somebody added it. And it's waiting on SR from you.
Okay. I'll do that after the meeting.
Excellent.
Yeah. I screwed up the URL. Are those the only two bugs that need to be listed there? Or is there anything
else?
There's the XBL one. Which is 368774, I think.
I'll add that to the wiki.
Let me check that.
I had here.
Yeah, 368.
There's Graydon has some patches too. I'm not sure what this status is though.
No, which ones are you talking about?
You had a patch for, so when you have a JavaScript cycle and one of the JavaScript objects is released, we currently don't release the cycle somehow. I vaguely remember something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, okay. It's one for suspecting all the native wrappers. It's like a one-liner, but it's kind of important. Let me just dig that one up. Hang on.
I have it. 368869.
Yeah.
So do you think we should do something about that?
Yeah. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it still needs to be in.
So that just needs review. Super review.
Yep. I think. Yeah.
I can SR if there's a need. This is
okay.
Johnny.
Sure. Yeah, if you take a look at it, it's a real small patch.
Okay.
It just essentially it hooks into the XPC wrap native scope thing that goes through and marks all the wrappers, and it additionally suspects them all using. I had one interface, the cycle collector, that says when you're starting. When you're starting cycle collection, there's a callback between the cycle collector and the individual language runtimes of the cycle collector says, okay, we're about to start cycle collection. Do anything that you want to sort of prepare for it. And that's the callback in which typically the JS runtime calculates all the ref counts of all the objects inside of its heap. And it does that by running a JSGC and then using a callback during that JSGC to tabulate ref counts. In the process, I just add one extra line here that that forces a suspect on all the native wrappers.
Okay.
The scenario that can cause this is that if there's a cycle that's garbage in all respects except for a link inside the JS graph, then there's essentially a race condition wherein the cycle could have the XPCOM side of the cycle could have been registered, scanned, found not to be garbage, and forgotten about before it becomes garbage. And then if the cycle becomes garbage due to a JS edge dropping, it'll never be resuspected again if you don't have something like this hooking into it.
Gotcha.
How do we deal with expandos set on nodes, for example? How do we unlink those? If I set element B as an expando on element A and expando and element A as an expando on element B, how is that how is that broken?
I'm not sure, actually.
I don't know what an expando is in that context.
An expando is simply you set a JS property on a DOM node.
Right, so where does that wind up storing?
It's stored in the JS object.
So JS object winds up having a pointer to a XPCOM wrap native?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the wrap natives get preserved in the elements wrap native.
Yep.
No, they don't need to get preserved. They're being held.
The JS object will hold them alive.
The JS object holds the JS side of the wrapper alive.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the JS side of the wrapper holds the XPC side of the wrapper alive.
Yep.
But, yeah. And then there's an edge back, like, if you have element A holding on.
Well, when does it become garbage? It becomes garbage only when, like, we're not talking about collecting general cycles. This thing only collects garbage cycles. Graphs are allowed inside of live graphs. When does it become garbage?
So if no one else holds anything onto this, if one of these, say that one of the object elements were living inside a DOM tree.
Yeah.
And then we remove that element from the DOM tree. At that point, it becomes garbage.
Okay. Does the C++ side of the wrapper go dead at that point? Has it been freed?
I guess...
That'll go dead once JSGC runs and frees the JS object.
Oh, yeah. I guess those are just normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it should all just work.
Okay.
The
native wrapper dropping to 1 should mean that it doesn't root the JS side anymore, and then the JSGC
will free. And then the JS object gets freed. And
I don't know if we had a situation where we could have a JS wrapper for node A holding on to a JS wrapper for another node holding on through C++ code somehow back to the other node. And I don't know how that cycle, if one of those would be rooted somehow, which I don't think we ever do.
Well, you need to break it on the C++ side, probably.
Right, but those get torn down when the documents go away, right? I don't actually know how that code works nowadays.
I don't know. It might be done in unlink.
Okay.
I don't know either.
Yeah, well, you figure that out. It used to be through your GC participant thing.
Though I think it probably does get undone when the document's torn down, but of course the cycle could hold the document.
Right. So we need to look at that.
Somebody said something on the phone, probably got lost. No.
Well, I was saying that you probably need to break that cycle on the C++ side.
Right.
Using unlink.
Mm-hmm.
One other potential issue, sort of unrelated to the issues we've been discussing. So I've been, like, since we fixed the collector not to fault early, I've been, or around then, I've been noticing some pretty long pauses with the CPU pegged in my trunk build. And I haven't yet verified whether those are cycle collection happening or not, but the pauses seem pretty long. Like sometimes 5 or 10 seconds.
Hmm.
It's possible it could be something else, but
this is debug build. Or
yeah, it's debug.
I'm a little worried that as we keep adding more and more objects, that it's going to get slow.
Do you guys have, or do you want to have a test of responsiveness? I mean, that can be tricky. Do you guys have something, a way to test responsiveness per se, as opposed to other kinds of performance?
It might be worthwhile doing, and it's actually fairly easy to do just with JavaScript timers, or an interval that just basically just fires every 10 milliseconds, which is the shortest interval, and just record whether they actually happen. If you end up with a 5-second delay between two, then something really bad happened. These numbers aren't going to be exact in any way.
Right.
It's going to be a little tricky to get
that's
totally
true,
reproducible.
That's true,
but
performance analysis.
Right. but it might be worth having something like that. I don't know if we get that on Tinderbox or what.
The question is, though, how do we figure out what happened during that, because we find out after the fact that, okay, the last timer fired 5 seconds ago.
Right.
Too late.
Well, but if we have a test like this running on Tinderbox, and we start seeing that these things start happening consistently more often, then we know that something changed. We don't know.
Yeah, it's like any other high-level performance metric, right? It's just going to tell you, it's just going to give you a signal you can try correlating with check-ins. It's not going
to
do you find
other
profiling or anything.
The other thing we could do is you could run a timer-based profiler simultaneously and record the two sets of data in the same file,
right,
and then use that to pick out who's so you could then get profile segments for who's pausing the longest.
Right. But that's more of a debugging tool than a test, Tinderbox-like test.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not opposed to doing that as well, or even in a debugger.
Yeah, but you could just modify like the top level event loop to record the latency between event dispatches, how long the worst time it's been inside a single event dispatch. Just tiny little hack into the browser to be able to tell you.
Or really, we could also just add a, whether we control it with an environment variable or whatnot, but add instrumenting code, or printf basically to the cycle collector code that says, okay, we're starting to collect cycles now at this timestamp, and then once we're done, we print out when we're, how long it took.
Yep. There's lots of ways to do this.
Yeah.
The cycle collector will halt the world, halt the universe.
Yeah.
Main thread, yeah.
And you guys don't have that instrumented already?
I don't know. Have you done any timing tests at all, Graydon?
Nope.
Yeah, let's add that as an item to it.
Yeah, that's probably worthwhile having. I know there's other problems like that that are unrelated to cycle collection. If you run builds for a long, long, long time, you end up in situations like that. I just fixed one. I didn't fix the problem, but I fixed one of the symptoms of it a while ago. But it's something that's available on branches. Well, or happens on branches to you.
So
if you're gonna do timestamp based, also break it down to see the difference between the cycle collection graph crawl and the JSGC that it has to do.
It's good
to see the balance between those two times. Because the last time I was doing sample profiling of it, the JSGC was actually the dominant cost of the crawl. But I don't know, maybe we got a lot more.
Maybe that changed since I landed.
Yeah.
Okay, who's gonna implement that?
Are you talking about the instrumentation?
Yep.
In the...
Who's gonna add the time for NIPS?
I could do that.
Given that, is it still worth doing something that talks at the higher level with times, events, and collects that information? Or is this going to point to it much more? It's probably going to point to it at a much more fine-grained level, so it's fine.
Oh, I have a question for Johnny.
Uh-huh.
So do we need to worry about timeouts? Can they keep the window alive in a cycle?
Sorry, JS timeouts, you mean?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Do you mean
because
that?
I think we're.
You mean
we're
that
traversing.
Keeps the document alive while we're cycle collecting, and then by the time we do the next cycle collection, there will be a new timer keeping it alive again. That's the question.
So the window owns a list of timeouts. Timeouts can be functions, and the functions would hold the window alive.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe we're traversing those already.
We're traversing the JScript timeout handler, but I don't think we're traversing the timeout structures that the window, the global window, has.
Oh, the XBCon timer, you mean, or?
Yeah, I thought we were. I remember playing with that in a patch. I'm not sure if it wound up landing.
I remember you sending me a patch saying, hey, this helps, and I never integrated it.
Okay. There's also, because the timeouts are not NSI supports, there's an open question in my mind about whether they're multiply owned, because they are ref counted. That may require 774 to land as well. If you want to do individual accounting on the timeouts. I'm not sure if they could ever be multiply owned. I don't really know what a scenario where the timeout exists in multiple windows means, but
yeah, the reason for the ref count on timeouts is just for internal management of those objects. As far as references to them and from them go, they're always contained within a single window.
Yeah, so it probably doesn't depend on 774 then. I think the way we wrote the patch was just to assume that they're essentially internal accounting
for
a single edge.
So we're not traversing them?
Currently? Oh, okay. Yeah, we should.
All right. Is that patch still floating around somewhere?
Yeah, I probably have it in a tree.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're traversing. There's a script. JS script timeout, I think. Yeah, JS script timeout handler, those objects we're traversing, but those are held onto by NS timeout objects that the window holds in a list, and we're not traversing the NS timeout objects. So if there's a cycle there, we're not getting to it.
Yeah, I thought, that should definitely be in the list. The traversal should go through those.
But
But
Johnny,
the
I think the NS timer holds on to those.
The XPCOM timer objects hold on to the window. And the NS timeout struct is just an internal thing that I don't believe we would need to include in this graph. As long as we traverse through them and find the timeout handlers, then we should be all right.
Okay, so the ref count, as I understood it for these objects, was that the window holds one and the timer holds one, the XPCOM timer?
No. The XPCOM timer only holds onto the window. So the window object holds a strong ref on the NS timeout struct,
mm-hmm.
or potentially more than one as it's using them. It builds lists of these things and goes through them as it's firing timeouts, and then releases them. And there's some of these live on the stack and whatnot, so it's a big mess. But I don't believe we would need to include those in the cycle collection graph.
So does the window cancel the timer when it releases those objects? The XPCOM timer when it releases those objects?
Yes.
Okay, so then it's really the window who owns the strong ref.
Right.
Okay, yeah, so it's really the window who should traverse them.
The window should traverse the XPCOM timer objects, and it should traverse the handlers.
It can't traverse the XPCOM timeout, the timer objects, because those are thread safe.
Okay. Well. For every pending timer though, we're gonna have a strong reference on a window.
Right.
And we need to account for that, right?
Right. So the thing is that the window holds on to the XPCOM timer, and the XPCOM timer holds on to the window.
Right. But that cycle is always broken when a window is closed or you leave the page that created those timers, et cetera.
Oh, okay. So maybe we don't need to worry about it then.
That could be. Unless we need to just to get the accounting right for the reference count on the window object.
Well, I mean, once you leave the page, then
right. That
should not be an issue.
We only care about the correct reference count when we want to collect it.
Okay. Yeah, then we shouldn't need to worry about those.
Okay, excellent.
So, I'm a little scared about saying that we can have it sort of that we count on that we go through the notification of leaving a window, but maybe we do that for a lot of things.
Yeah, we would leak. We'd leak the window if we don't. And we, you know, every page uses timeouts today.
Could we just like collect that stuff?
Apparently, we can't because of the native timers being thread-safe. Unless we can add some other intermediate object in there just for cycle management purposes, but
David, you were looking into some debugging tools?
Yeah, I have a patch that I'm going to land once this meeting's over.
So how do can you explain how that one works?
So basically, that patch is just about specific objects need to tell the cycle collector that they think they're garbage now. And then at shutdown, it'll print an explanation of why those objects weren't collected.
Okay.
If they weren't collected.
Right. It'll tell how many...
It'll say what had external references.
Okay.
Although that'll only get what's reachable from that object, but to some extent... You know, so there could be other objects the cycle collector might have known about at some point, but they're still sort of external in some sense. I mean, it does give you a hint as to whose references you should be looking at when you want to see why it's not collected.
So what objects participate in this? Is it the window object?
Right now, it's just window and document.
Okay.
And
yeah, so it could be that the cycle collector knows who's holding on to that window, but because you start from the window, because you miss some edges somewhere, you're not able to close the loop. So even though the cycle collector knows some of the objects that hold on to it, you're missing some objects upstream of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the thing is, the cycle collector would have known about them in one cycle, but not another. And, you know, because if they were purple in one cycle and then something else was purple in another cycle, it's fun. But I think it is generally a pointer to something that's useful to look into.
Yeah.
I may yet be proven wrong, but...
And does it tell you what the actual ref count is?
It tells you the number that are missing. So, like, it says two external references unaccounted for. I don't think I bothered printing out what the... Like, I did the subtraction, but didn't print out the numbers that I was subtracting. But if you want that, you can always change the printout.
Yeah.
And just out of curiosity, what other colors are involved in this thing other than purple?
Gray, black, and white.
Mostly gray.
Yeah, there's also green, red, and orange, but we're not modeling those colors. No, seriously, those are for extensions to the protocol. At some point, we'll handle that, but not today.
So okay. Is purple the only color I really need to worry about what it means?
Gray, black, and white.
You need to worry.
Purple, gray, black, and white.
Okay. Is there a description white on this somewhere?
White is good.
Let me guess what black is. Bad, eh?
Well, not necessarily.
Is there a bug? Is your patch tied to a bug somewhere?
Yeah, I put it on the wiki page already.
Ready? Okay. Adding that as the next step.
So, gray, black, and white are during the scanning phase, I guess. So, gray is... I guess initially during the scanning phase, everything that you reach is gray as you traverse to it.
Yeah.
And then is that right?
Yeah, I can explain it. It's pretty straightforward. Purple means you might be a garbage route. So you get entered into a purple status during normal operations anytime you might have just become a member of a garbage cycle. So that's something that ref count activity triggers purpleness. It either sets you to be purple or clears you from purple. That's normal when the program's running activity. Purple is about finding routes in the graph to start the crawl from. When you're actually doing the crawl, you transition between gray and either gray goes to white or gray goes to black. So gray means we could reach you during the crawl. You start by painting everything reachable from all the purple nodes gray. You then start looking at all the gray nodes that you visited and asking if you can account if in the process of coloring them all gray, you found enough in nodes or in edges to account for the reference count on that node. So you look at a node, the node says it has a reference count 5, you found 5 incoming edges. That's great. As far as you're concerned, that node is accounted for. You found all the things that are holding it. So you paint it white. Anything that you can account for all of the references for, you paint white, with one exception.
if you find any that you can't account for the references for, you paint it black, and you paint everything downstream of it black. So you flood forwards. Anytime you paint something black, it means it's still alive. There's unaccounted for references somewhere. You don't know who's holding it, but someone's holding it because you have a ref count of 7 and you only found 5 incoming edges. In that case, you paint black, and you flood black forwards all through the graph. So black affects everything downstream of it.
Cool.
At the end of your collection, everything that was gray should have either turned white or black. And the whites you're allowed to free, and the blacks you're not allowed to free.
And then we basically grab hold of all the white objects and unlink them.
We grab them, and then we make a request of all of them to delete the, or to unlink themselves from their children, because we can't actually free them. This is not a truly garbage collected system.
So, next steps, I'll take suggestions.
So, I'll try to drive the XBL patch in, as well as the patch that I'm working on, basically continuing adding more content objects. I think Peter got most of it, but there's small things here and there.
Okay. Right. Anything else?
I'll look at the XP Connect things and do the debug. Timing. Checking.
Also, if anybody has tests that, or if you guys are developing code on your own to test things as you're doing things and are not having time to integrate them into a test, you know, a standalone thing, you know, I'm absolutely willing to carry water for that. I mean, some of the tests in the XPCOM component have received recent care, but a lot of them haven't. And if you guys are doing stuff in this process, you know, if you want to throw it over the wall to me, and even if I can't bug you about it, even if you don't have time to answer questions, you know, I might be able to do something with it to put it into the suite of regularly running tests, and I'm willing to do that.
Can you just dig in and see if you can just go ahead and propose some tests? Would be best. Take a look at the code and propose.
Yeah. Looking at the XPCOM, you know, I'm afraid my analysis would be shallow, but I can try. Yeah. Okay.
At some point I want to write the test that makes sure we actually manage to kill off all objects as we're unlinked. But I'm not going to be able to do that before the vacation.
Looks like you're not going.
He'll do it on his surfboard.
Oh, you bastard. Okay. I won't even add that to it.
Well, Jonas, if you get something started and want to, you know, just throw it over to me and see if I can do anything with it, let me know. Sure.
That won't be today.
No.
But I might be able to do that next week.
Are you going on vacation after that?
Yeah. But I'll be out of office next week.
Great. Any suggestions for next steps?
No, unfortunately, as always, I really... I'm in the dark. I wish it worked better than it does. Keep applying patches.
It's getting there.
Yeah, it is. But it's not there yet.
I think we should try to get to a point where, you know, starting up and shutting down doesn't leak, and you know, maybe the bloat cycle test doesn't leak anymore. and then we can start attacking specific pages where we still see leaks.
So I just want to confirm, you posted in a bug, or you commented, Peter, that start and stop resulted in zero leakage. That is no longer the case now?
Today it still is, but with the RDF patch, I don't see it anymore. But today it still is leaking.
All right.
At some point, I want to be able to start depending on this, like to kill, for example, Linux document destroy code, and turning some things, I think, that are weak references into strong references. But I don't want to do that yet. We're still leaking, so it seems dumb to add more leaks at this point.
Adding more leaks would be bad.
Or adding potential leaks, I should say.
Okay. All right. So, to summarize again, Johnny will add some timing printfs, specifically with cycle collection graph call times and JavaScript GC times. DBaron's going to land a patch related to debugging, right? And that's, which bug is that specifically? Your patch?
It's one of the ones on the...
One of the ones...
It's the one that has shutdown dump in it.
Has shutdown dump, okay. Sicking is going to drive XML patch in... XBL patch, sorry.
Yeah.
In as well as a patch from Peter V, adding more content objects.
That's actually the same patch.
Yeah.
Those two.
Okay. Then JST will continue with XP Canary. Anything else? Same time.
Yeah, I'm going to try landing 368869. To make the cycle collector suspect all native wrappers.
What was that bug number again, please?
368869.
It's on the wiki page, actually.
Okay. So we'll see you guys again, same time next week.
Okay.
All right.
Technically, it's an hour.
Using Star Trek Universal Coordinated Time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Everybody remember to set the clock for.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
Okay.
Really an hour early.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.